Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer with you on WNYC, and right now we are pleased to introduce a new election year series called That's My Issue. We're gathering stories of how your own life experiences have shaped your politics. We have a new webpage for this, wnyc.org/issues, where you can write down or record your story and create a That's My Issue badge. You can share it on social media, too. Go to wnyc.org/issues for our That's My Issue interactive page. You can write, record, create a badge, share it on social media. And here on the air, we're inviting your calls right now at 212-433-WNYC with the story of any experience in your life that has affected your political outlook. 212-433-9692. Maybe you're directly affected by one of the big trends of the last 4 years since the financial crisis began and since President Obama was elected, becoming unemployed or foreclosed on. Or maybe you're a business owner affected by the burst housing bubble or by the health care law or the stimulus bill or declining interest rates. We just heard in our last segment about some people becoming homeless now at a faster rate than before in New York as a result of recent economic trends. How have any of these things that have happened in the last 4 years affected you and shaped or changed your political views? 212-433-WNYC, as long as they've affected you directly. Or it can be things from other aspects of your life or earlier in your life that shaped your politics, growing up in poverty or striking it rich, becoming a parent, your student loan debt. Maybe you were a victim of crime or of the criminal justice system. Maybe it was your immigration story. Maybe it's what you've seen as a teacher or a police officer or a soldier in Iraq. How has any experience in your own life shaped your political views? Not something you read about in the New York Post or saw on MSNBC that got you mad. Things that have actually happened to you that have shaped your political views. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. That's My Issue page, wnyc.org/issues, we have a video of a few folks who we've already asked this question to. Here's a sampling of New Yorkers telling us how their experiences affected their issue concerns.
I grew up in a single-parent home. My mother raised 5 children by herself. We were raised in a public housing project. My mother instilled in us the value and importance of education. Unfortunately, I think the public school system is failing most of our children. That's black, white, red, brown, and yellow.
I have a son who needs a job, so I'm very, very concerned about the creation of jobs.
I specifically care about health care. I'm a paramedic for the city of New York. We see, I guess, what we call frequent flyers. People that go to the hospital regularly, and we know them by name. It's not that we don't care about these people, because we do. They're important people. They need our help. We need to find another way to help them.
So there's paramedics, some other folks identifying how their priorities got shaped in terms of issues. Let's play another montage. Here's another clip of several folks answering our question. It's a sampling of more New Yorkers telling us how their experiences affected their issue concerns. And this begins with one guy who got his green card.
Immigration. Because he had young kids who come from different country here, and they're doing well in school, and they after leave school, they don't have a job. They can't get a job because they don't have no papers, and they came here illegal, you know what I'm saying? I got a green card, and I'm able to work and take care of myself. And it's hard to get a job. So you can imagine them who don't have no papers, nothing. Give them a chance. Give them temporary stay. Let them get a job and try to better themselves.
Foster care is, a lot of my family went to foster care, like my sister, my brother, and me. And it's like some families are good, but some aren't. So like maybe some people should be better qualified.
Well, I live in the financial district. So, you know, the more the banks are regulated, the longer I can sleep in because Occupy Wall Street will stop.
So there are a few examples. You can see that whole video on our That's My Issues page at wnyc.org/thatsmyissue. Also, you can write and record your own stories there and create a badge. You'll see how to do that. It's a cool tool, and you can share it on social media. What's your experience in your life that helped to form your politics? Let's talk to some of our callers as our lines are full now. Bob on Staten Island, you're on WNYC. Bob, thank you for calling in.
Yes, thank you. My issue is tax fairness. A few years ago in 2007, 2008, I made about $75,000, $80,000, which is a decent amount of money, and I paid no taxes. Not only did I not pay taxes, the government gave me about a $1,000 check. On the federal side.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always, when President Obama brought up tax fairness, that was always my issue, but he's only focusing on capital gains. He doesn't look at also the people that don't pay taxes because they use municipal bonds or triple-free municipal bonds or other loopholes to get around not paying any taxes. I always believe that people should have skin in the game.
So you think that your taxes are too high because too many other people have ways of...
No, I don't say my taxes are too high. I said too low. I paid nothing in about 4 years ago, which I thought was ridiculous.
Bob, got it. And that, of course, is a big issue already in the campaign. And people aren't getting specific, but they're talking about eliminating the so-called tax expenditures or the loopholes and adjusting tax rates around that. That's a really interesting story from Bob to start us off, because he thinks his taxes are too low, as you heard him say, and that's an issue of tax fairness that's reflected through, in a way, an advantage that he gets. Shirley in Pompton Plains, you're on WNYC. Hi, Shirley.
Hi. It's so nice to be able to talk to you and share some things with you. I'm talking about an incident that affected my politics over my many years. And I was born in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, and was a member of a Methodist church where I sang in the choir. And I went to a summer camp that the church provided and at Drew Seminary in Carmel, New York, and was taught about Jim Crow. Now, this is in 1945.
Wow.
And they showed pictures of segregated eating and other facilities, the restrooms and so forth, and black men hanging from trees. And when I saw that as a young kid in high school, I vowed then to make a change someday in some way to right that situation. And 15 years later, became a folk singer about civil rights, peace, love, and so forth. And in 1950, I lived near Camp Breckinridge in Kentucky as an army wife and saw what I had learned in that religious study. So I just wanted you to know that things might come later on in life, but it does affect the way you feel. And I have been a big member of various organizations that are for peace and love and like the Sloop, the Clearwater.
Uh-huh. So, Shirley, I'm curious about one thing. When you learned about Jim Crow through your congregation, you were learning about something intellectually. Then when you saw it in Kentucky, how did that change you?
Well, as a musician and being a singer, I decided to take up the guitar, and through the teacher that I was learning the guitar from, who did songs about peace and love and all of those things, I started to do programs singing mm-hmm. about right. that music.
Shirley, thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate your story that goes all the way back to 1945. Mike in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your issue? What happened to you?
I had my pension taken away from me about 14 years ago. I work in a public corporation, and and I was thrown into the fray having to invest on my own without any real financial education. I've sort of done well on my own, but the fact being, I'm sort of resent the fact that I have to pay taxes for public employees and all their big pensions. So that's my issue, and that's sort of shaped my politics, because I don't want anything else taken away from me. I can't afford it. I have to pay for a college education for a child, and now I also have to pay for my retirement as well, and without having a defined benefit program for my pension.
Your pension was in the private sector at a private company, right?
Correct.
And how did you lose it? What happened to that company?
The company is still in business. It's a large corporation, but I'm in a union. Unfortunately, my union, if you contribute to a pension as an employee with the company, legally they're not allowed to do anything to your pension. We never contributed as employees to the pension. It was solely the company that gave it to us. Mm-hmm. So they were allowed to do anything they want to that pension. So they took it away and gave us some funky cash balance system that is just horrible.
Now, I could see that affecting somebody's politics either way, either the way you described, or winding up being more sympathetic, if that's the right word, toward the public employees because you don't want to see anybody else's pensions denigrated.
Well, it cuts both ways. That's true. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is I'm still paying. Nothing looks like it's coming my way as far as help. And I pay a lot of taxes for public employees to get pensions, and they don't want to change anything. They don't want to go into a 401k plan. Mm-hmm. So they all have these great defined benefit programs and health care benefits for the rest of their lives, when I'm going to have to be paying out of my pocket in retirement for a lot of this stuff.
Mike, thank you very much. A very salient story to a lot things that are affecting a lot of people right now. Folks, what's your issue? Call us up, 212-433-WNYC, how something that happened to you in your life has affected your political outlook, or post it to our new site at wnyc.org/issues. Parisa in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling in.
Hi, Brian. I love your show.
Thank you.
My story was basically, just to put it concisely, I moved here when I was 11 on my parents' H-1 visa. I was an H-4. My brother and I were on H-4 visas. My father was a science teacher, and it did take quite a number of years for him to get his green card. But during that time, we didn't have any medical insurance, and although I was qualified for scholarships while I entered Rutgers, I couldn't be eligible for them due to the fact that I was on an H-4 status and then subsequently changed to a J-1 status, which is a student visa. I sort of formed an opinion that leans towards the left due to this fact, because I do believe that individuals and families such as ours, whose parents are working and paying taxes and providing public benefits, such as working in a school system, should get medical insurance. Their kids should have some, I guess, not necessarily rewards, but maybe rewards for doing well in school and going to school and being able to help pay for school. And so I'm a Democrat, largely because of how I was raised, and I do believe that we need each other to help progress the society.
Great, great story. Thank you very much. Now, Paul Ryan's story has been in the news from the Republican side. This is an example of a that's my issue kind of story. Now that he's the vice presidential nominee, more people are learning about how the death of his father when Ryan was a teenager moved him toward thinking about public policy. Here's a little bit of the way he put it when he was introduced in Norfolk, Virginia as the running mate on Saturday.
My dad died when I was young. He was a good and decent man. There are a few things he would say that have just always stuck with me. He'd say, "Son, you're either part of the problem or part of the solution."
So Ryan on Saturday, and here's a clip of Ryan's brother on Fox News amplifying the story.
There's no doubt that that was a very important moment for him, for me, for all of us. He was living at home. He was the only child at the time. I was off at college. My father passed away, and Paul grew up very, very, very quickly. He got a job. My mother started a new career and got on a bus and went up to UW to get a new skill so she could start her own business. Paul goes to work at McDonald's, and he's also becomes class president this year. He got focused very, very, very quickly.
So Paul Ryan and there his brother Tobin talking about how the death of their father started to make Paul Ryan political. What experience in your life helped to form your politics? Melanie in Brantford, Connecticut. You're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call. My big issue is the Patriots Act, because I grew up in the darkest days of South African apartheid, really quite indescribable, and I could so relate to what Shirley was saying, except I wasn't looking at photographs. I was actually experiencing it. I am white, so I had all the privilege, but there was something called 90-day detention and then 180-day detention with so-called political prisoners could be put away without access to a lawyer or even for the families to know exactly where they were. So I know what, and there was no recourse. The opposition to the government was ineffective, perhaps because of it was such a police state. So I understand the terror and the fear of terrorism and what it can do to this country. But any laws that come close to what I experienced in South Africa, they're wonderful if they can be implemented in a way that you and I might implement them, mm-hmm. but they are inherently deeply flawed because we can never guarantee that they won't become like they were in South Africa.
Is there a particular provision of the Patriot Act that most concerns you based on your experience in South Africa?
A lot of it does, but the detention without trial, you know, that you don't have to, like within 24 hours, have to be accused of something. You know, I can understand the need for something that's like that. But if you think about it for a moment, how much it can be abused by a political party or a dictator to make sure that no opposition ever threatens the entity in power. It's just inherently weak because of that. And we used to think, you know, God, can you imagine living in the United States of America where they have freedom of the press and they have such wonderful civil liberties? In fact, honestly, when I came here and became a citizen, it took me a while to adjust to being able to live in such a free society. What do you mean you don't have to salute the flag or say the prayers at school? You know, you're a kid. Listen to what you're told to do. Because that was my mentality. And even so, this notion that you could just disappear off the streets and be held without access to a lawyer. You might be innocent. There is that possibility, and you might be living in a society where they put away any type of opposition, which was what South Africa was like.
Melanie, thank you so, so much. And for Melanie and all of you calling in when you finish up on the air, and everyone else is not going to get on the air, go to our webpage for this, wnyc.org/issues, and write down or record. We even have an audio recording tool there. Your personal experience that helped shape your politics, and you'll see how you can create a badge in the process, an online badge that you can share on social media that's also a cool thing, and spread the word about this at wnyc.org/issues. Abby in South Brunswick, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, good morning. What's influenced me is my work. I've been teaching English as a second language to immigrants for about 15 years. And I constantly run into the comments, these people don't even want to speak English, and they come here just to get on welfare or get food stamps, or and they're lazy and they're this and that. I've worked with immigrants from all over Latin America, from Russia, from Korea, from several African countries. And what I find is these immigrants, first of all do want to learn English very much. There often aren't programs available, especially if they're adults. But in general, they show all the qualities that we in the United States say we admire. They've come here to escape persecution or the impossibility of finding work. They made the heartbreaking decision to leave everyone and everything they knew to come here. And all they want to do is work hard, make a living, support themselves, and get a good education for their children, just like the rest of us.
So teaching English to immigrants changed your perspective on immigrants to the United States. Thank you for your call. Ed in Weston, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ed. Ed, are you there?
Here.
Hi.
Hi there. So in 2008, things were looking really good for people who owned real estate. My brother was one of them, and he spent a lot of time focused on money. You know, he was a police officer, but he made a lot of money, and he bought luxury cars, and his wife bought a luxury car, and then everything fell apart, and he lost his house, and he and his wife got a divorce, and his whole self-concept fell apart, and he took his own life.
Oh.
And it really made me realize how much money has shaped our world, and it shapes our politics. And you can't have money. I'm sorry, you can't be a member of Congress without having lots of money. You can't run for president without having lots of money. And it's radicalized me in a way. I think I see how much we've become a culture that is focused on affluence to the detriment of so many other values. And so I think I see politics now through that lens more than I ever did before.
It's such a traumatic thing to have happen to you, losing your brother to suicide. When you say it radicalized you and made you focus on the place of money in our lives, does it make you come down on a specific side of any issue? Like, were you heading toward campaign finance reform with what you were saying a minute ago, or foreclosure relief, or, you know, as tangible as you can make it on an issue?
Well, certainly campaign finance reform. I don't see it happening. It seems like it's kind of going in the opposite direction. But also the other side of that is the way money shapes policy in all sorts of arenas. Particularly in finance. When even the Democrats can't get beyond the influence of the banks, it just seems like there's not a lot of hope.
Ed, thank you very much for your call. I'm sorry for your loss. We'll take one more for today, and then we're going to do a series of these. Today we've been asking the question very generally, how have your life experiences shaped your political views? We're going to cut it in various ways over the coming days, between now and the start of the conventions, where we will also be asking this question to delegates, both in Tampa with the Republicans and in Charlotte with the Democrats. So this is just the beginning of this series, but the last call for today, Anne in Montclair. Air, you're on the air. Hello.
Well, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to speak about this. It's been about 15 years. 15 years ago, I was in the process, my husband and I, of trying to have a child. And in about 16th week, we found out that the fetus had many difficulties and was not viable, and that I needed to terminate. And at the time, though I had great health insurance, our finances were fine, I had to go to a clinic, because in New Jersey, that was my only option. My husband could not be with me because of the way the clinic was set up. There were guards at the door. I was in a room with 20 other people. It was not private. And I had excellent doctors, and they said, this is your only choice. This has absolutely impacted my political choices. Unfortunately, I can't get past that because there's a lot of other issues, obviously, that I need to consider when I pick the president of the United States, but I cannot get past that. So for me, 15 years ago, that has absolutely influenced my choice. And now I have a 14-year-old son who is wonderful. And so it's a distant memory in some ways, but it has absolutely impacted my choice.
And so your experience with abortion made you more pro-choice.
Absolutely. And all I think about, if it was a candidate's daughter who was in the same position as I was, would they not follow through the way I had? So when I hear politicians speak that they would not support pro-choice, I always think to myself, yes, but if it was your daughter in this position, how would you have handled this?
Anne, thank you so much for your call. We really appreciate it. And to end on a slightly lighter note, one of the things posted on the page already comes from Stanley, who writes, what's my issue? Zipcars shouldn't charge Fridays as weekends. He says he has to work on Fridays. It's not a weekend. Why charge him the extra rate? So from the profound to the ridiculous, what's your issue? That concludes part one of our new election year series. That's My Issue, experiences from your own life that have helped to shape your political views. And as I said, this is just the beginning of this online and social media project. You can help us build our That's My Issue story archive on our website and share it with your social media friends at wnyc.org/issues. We already have some great stories there, Stanley's, and ones that are slightly more serious, that you can read or listen to. Just go to wnyc.org/issues, and while you're there, write down your story or record it. We have an audio recording tool, and you can create your very own That's My Issue badge that'll become part of the archive and that you can share on social media. Tell us how your story became your issue at wnyc.org/issues. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we go overseas. Middle East and radical Islam watcher Fawaz Jurjess on the crisis in the Sinai, a big test for Egypt's new democracy and its commitment to peace with Israel. And then on this 100th anniversary of her birth, how did Julia Child affect your kitchen? Stay with us.